I want to thank you for tuning into the Naked Podcast. I'm your host, Emma Hislop, and today I'm interviewing Emily Feichels of Emily Feichels on Instagram. She recently just changed her handle, and she actually has her own podcast known as Let's Thrive. When I first started my podcast, I went to Emily, and she graciously gave me all of this information in order to start. To be completely honest, I still don't really know what I'm doing, but I'm enjoying it. I'm loving podcasting. And before we get into this episode, I want to touch on what's happening in the world right now. So I want to support you guys through this time and maybe give you some words of encouragement. So right now in the world, everything feels quite heavy. There's a lot of uncertainty and unknowns, but know that we can't control the world at large, and we can only control the way in which we react to the problems as they arise. And also, something I want to note is that we're all in this together. We all have to unite as one in order to make a positive change, and to uplift others' days is something that we have to choose in order to make light of problems in our lives. And know that you're not alone. We are all in this together, not to quote High School Musical, but we truly are. And if you need anything, please do not hesitate to reach out to me. I'm more than happy to help, and I'm wishing you a wonderful rest of your week. So I want to welcome Emily on the show. She actually has her own podcast, so this will be a little bit different for her, but I'm so honored to have her on. We met back in the fall in New York City, and I feel like I start every podcast like this. Like, I'm like, I met this person back in the fall in New York City, but we truly did meet in real life in the fall in New York City during my event. She's coming on here today, and we're going to be chatting about a lot of things, to tell you the truth. But I'm going to let Emily introduce herself and tell you what she does and what she does on Instagram and all that good stuff. So I'm going to let Emily take it over from here.
Well, first off, thank you so much for having me, Emma. It's very fun to be on the other side of the microphone, so to speak, and I'm excited for this. But yeah, for anyone that, you know, is unfamiliar with me, my name is Emily Feichels, and I'm a podcast host, holistic storyteller, and just what I like to think of as a multi-passionate entrepreneur in the making. So I'm someone that's wearing lots of different hats. I spend my days going from part-time jobs to podcasting to content creation, finding little moments in between to research and implement and just grow this brand I'm trying to create. I'm also a college dropout. I love my cats. And basically what I always like to remind people is that I'm just like everyone else. You know, we're all trying to figure out this crazy world we live in. We're all riding the struggle bus at times. And my passion with what I do is just to really be a guide, kind of be there alongside you as you go through these struggles and these phases in life, and just remind people that they're never alone. Because that was something I felt for a long time in my life. So that's something I want people to really know. You know, you're not alone. There's always someone that's going through this with you. There's always someone you can lean on. So that's me in a nutshell, I suppose.
I love that. And you started your podcast back about a year and a half ago, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's called Let's Thrive. And I want to know, what got you interested in podcasting? And what tips do you have for people who are interested in the podcasting world? Cause I went to you when I wanted to start my own podcast,
which was so fun. I love, you know, helping people get things started. So that was a lot of fun, but yeah, I guess I got interested when I was probably about 18 years old. I was going through what I like to call my deep darkness, AKA lots of confusion, lots of health issues. Just my life was a little bit of a turmoil. So I really turned to podcasts. They were a way for me to feel connected, to find community. They really taught me a lot. And, you know, one day I just stumbled upon a podcast, which led to another, and I was a podcast junkie overnight. So, you know, listening to these podcasts and the guests and the hosts, I just started to learn a lot more about myself and the world in general than I had in like all my 12 years of schooling. I just suddenly, my mind was so open to all these changes. You know, I wanted to change my actions, and I realized through podcasts actually that I was still struggling with orthorexia, that I was exercise obsessed, it was through a podcast that I really learned what it means to be an entrepreneur and that college isn't always the answer. There was a few episodes that really helped me deal with grief and understanding, you know, like how energy works in the body and just all these topics that really changed my life. And so later on, when the thought of maybe I should start a podcast came into my mind, it was really a no-brainer for me. I just love to talk and question people and I wanted to help others. So that's how I got interested in the podcast. And then it was that immense interest and love for them that really helped prompt me to create my own, if that answers the question.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah. I was like so inspired by yours because I remember when you first started and I was like, you know what? I feel like there's so much more to, you know, different social media platforms that we can have deep conversations in and not be like limited to so many words or characters and get our messages across in like the most authentic and raw way, which is through conversation. And I think that like everyone craves connection at the end of the day. So
yes. Yeah. I mean, like we all, like I was saying before, I feel like we all feel alone in some aspect of our life. Nobody has it all put together. And so that's why I really like podcasting because I think it is important. Like you said, we can't convey as much in a typed out caption as we can in a conversation. Like I love voice, you know, inflection and just really getting your message across by the way you pronounce your words, the way you add in a chuckle, you smile while you talk. There's all these ways you can really connect with people even more through the podcasting realm. And that's what is truly special about it. You know, and same goes for YouTube, I suppose, as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, YouTube, I'm like trying to brave up for that, I think. And like, I'm like, I don't know how to do anything with a camera like that. So I'm like, oh, we'll stick with the podcasting for a while.
Yeah, and I feel like I would freeze like a deer in headlights in front of a camera. You know, I'd like turn it on to start recording and suddenly not know what to say. So I'm right there with you. YouTube's probably not my thing.
Yeah, I feel that 100%. I'm like, I would turn the camera on and be like, I don't even know if this thing is on right now. But yeah, I think it's a great way to actually, you know, and learn so much too. Like there's things that you learn from other people and things that they've been through that you're like, oh, well, this person said this in this podcast and I've even done that before. And it's like, okay, that's helped me even get through a hard time. So I think if you can convey other people's stories, it's helping your audience in a deeper, more meaningful way. I was going to ask you what's the most rewarding aspect, but I feel like we've already covered that through connection and inspiration. But I want to know what made you interested in the health and wellness world specifically?
Yeah. So I guess this kind of goes into, and as you were asking that, I realized I forgot a part of the previous question. You kind of asked about like, you know, starting a podcast, tips and advice. And this goes into my interest in the health and wellness field as well. So something I like to do in my life in general, whether that's in real life, on Instagram, podcast, what have you, is I always like to have a why. So for me, I wanted to have a why am I doing this that aligns with my core values as a human, you know? So I started my show to help others going through the same struggles as me. And when I looked at what I was struggling with, it was with my health issues. And so, you know, everything I do, you know, if I really look at it, boils down to my why, which is to help people. And my biggest issues I go through are related to health. So where that all like really started as far as health goes, let me think. Okay. So I'd say it probably started when I was about 10 years old. So I was always a happy go lucky child, you know, healthy, I guess, so to speak, whatever. I never had a thought in my mind about my weight, my body, you know, if I was healthy, whatever that was. And then when I was 10, my mother actually passed away. And for the first few months I was, you know, grieving a lot. And then something in me just sort of snapped. And it was kind of like I had to disconnect. I always say I feel like a part of myself kind of retreated deep inside because I just couldn't like feel that pain anymore. And so I just remember becoming like super focused. I wanted control. I wanted to feel like I had my life together. And at that same time, I had a family doctor mention that I was X amount of pounds over my suggested weight, which is total bullshit in the first place. But you know, you tell that to a grieving 11-year-old girl and it never ends well. So long story short, I wound up becoming just obsessed with this idea of being healthy because to me, death and cancer, which is what my mom, you know, went with, was so out of my control that I told myself I can never get cancer because then I can't control my life. I can't control, you know, how I live and I'll die. And so I became fascinated with being healthy. And once more, I was 11 years old and getting my advice from Pinterest and like 17 magazine, all these nice reputable sources, you know, and of course, like all they're saying is to lose weight, best way to not get cancer, best way to be healthy. And so, you know, I'm a perfectionist. If I'm going into something, I'm going all in. So, you know, you best believe I really took that weight loss journey seriously. And what's tricky and what a lot of people with eating disorders, you know, can experience occasionally is that it went on for a long time before it started to gather attention because, you know, I was bigger back then. So when I started losing weight, it wasn't apparent. If anything, it was actually, you know, good in quotes, to everyone around me. They didn't see it as an issue until it became an issue. And, you know, at that point it was just the excessive exercise, the not eating enough, all these things. And so that's where my health journey really began. I'd go into treatment, I'd come back. And then for the 6 years after treatment, I would just kind of yo-yo between, you know, times of restricting and then times of over, you know, not, I don't know if I'd go as far as to call it binging. It was probably pretty damn close. And, you know, just excessive exercise addiction and going in and out of anxiety and seasonal depression. And I was just, you know, hot mess express, I'm telling you what. And so really those like young teen years and then later teen years were just consumed by my eating disorder and just this this fascination, this obsession really with being healthy. I just wanted to be healthy. And, you know, during that time, I also lost an aunt in the same way as my mom, who was just like a second mom to me. And so that really just spurred me into that cycle all over again. And so then in that, you know, I'd have these weird health issues besides the eating disorder pop up every now and then. And I went to doctors, I got blood work done and they'd always say, you know, oh, it's nothing, it's stress, you know, just always turning me away. And so then I'd say probably the end of my junior year of high school, things started to get kind of weird, you know, with my health. It was just extreme fatigue. You know, I remember one time I fell asleep while driving home from work. And that was a moment that really shook me to my core, you know, because I'm just, you know, never want to hurt anybody. So the thought of that really was a wake up moment and just, you know, extreme stomach issues, all these things that just started to pop up. And I didn't know what to do though. So I just kept on going on living quite miserably and really diving back into disordered eating to find control. So, you know, after that, then my senior year of high school, health issues kept getting worse. I would just like wake up and, well, like my whole issue was, you know, I couldn't go to sleep. I'd have night insomnia. Then in the morning, I was like, I didn't have any, anything to like wake my body up. So I could never wake up. And then, the fatigue was so bad, you know, I couldn't walk up steps. I went from running like 30 plus miles a week and doing HIIT training to not being able to walk up the steps. Everything was making me bloated. I remember distinctly once eating a handful of grapes and suddenly my stomach was so ballooned out, bloated. I had to like literally take off my pants and I called my cousin. I was like, something's really wrong. I don't know what's going on. I had really bad acid reflux, all, you know, sorts of gut issues. My brain fog was unreal. And, you know, so all of this just kept going on and getting worse. I was rapidly losing weight and this time I wasn't trying at all. It was actually scaring me. I remember trying to gain weight and I couldn't. It was so odd. And, you know, I knew something was wrong. So I wound up going to three different doctors and they all turned me away with either like a prescription or just saying it was stress. They were really just treating like they pick one symptom I was complaining about and try to treat it. So I just went on living in kind of a personal hell for that entire year, kind of struggling with eating disorder, struggling with my health. And then it's senior year of high school, you know, there's a lot going on, you know, and then it was the summer before college and kept getting worse, went to college and shit just hit the fan. I remember three nights while I was, so I went to college for a week before I dropped out. We can talk about that in a bit, but I just remember about three nights in particular where I was in so much pain. My entire body was just aching, felt like I was dying. I was really scared. And, you know, I wasn't telling people from the outside. I just looked kind of thin. You know, I had dark circles. My skin was really pale, almost a yellowish tint. But I'm such a people pleaser, and we can, you know, we talked about this before recording that I felt as though I had already been such a burden on everyone's life with my eating disorder and with just being a mess, you know, after losing my mom, that I didn't want to go to them complaining about my health issues. So I just kind of kept it all in. And, I remember the one night I was actually afraid of what would happen, you know, if I went to sleep, because I just felt my body felt like it was dying. And I kind of vowed to myself the next day that I would start telling people, and I did. So not to drag this out any too much longer, but just to start wrapping things up. So I came home from college and I just dedicated that year to trying to heal my health. And I saw a functional medicine doctor. He was great. He ran all these tests and found that my body was, in his words, like, he didn't really understand how I was a functioning human. It was really falling apart from the inside out. All my levels were off. I had, you know, infections, like so many weird things we didn't even know. And, you know, I was on a supplement regimen. I tried to do everything as holistically as possible. And, you know, nothing was helping. My symptoms were managed, but only if I dedicated insane amounts of time and energy and money to, you know, keeping with these supplement regimens and getting this amount of sleep and doing this and that. It was too much. Like, I knew there was something still wrong. So then, God bless Instagram. I was staying with an Instagram friend and her husband was listening to my symptoms, and he was probably like the fifth doctor I'd told them to at that point. And he actually suggested I see a liver specialist. So I came home from Texas where I was staying with them, got in with a liver specialist, and lo and behold, that's where things got interesting. So I'm just trying to think. So yeah, I went to the liver specialist, and they started looking over some blood work. And, you know, something I had left out earlier in the story was that when I was about 16, I tried to donate blood and they said they couldn't take my blood. I tested positive for hep C markers. But they told me it was just antibodies for hepatitis C. Now, where that comes into play is that my mom, when she was in the hospital for cancer treatments, she got infected by this nurse that was using needles. She developed hep C, you know, so not from any of the typical ways. She got it from, you know, just being sick in the hospital, and that led to liver cancer. That's what, you know, she died from. So it was alarming to my family when they saw I had hep C antibodies, meaning I'd been exposed to it. And what the doctor said, that meant I'd been exposed to it, but that my body had fought it off. So they ruled it out, you know, they said I was fine. So I go to this liver specialist and they start running tests. And after about a month, they came back that I had chronic hepatitis C. So to put that in, you know, perspective, how we knew it was bad, a normal person taking this test would have a marker below 15. My marker was over 11 million. So the hep C was really raging in my body. If you understand how it works in the body, that's what was causing pretty much all my symptoms. And so the whole idea behind it was that I think I used, you know, I must've used a razor of my mom's or something after she passed. I got infected and then it was inside me for, you know, 8 years. And then I think it got triggered, you know, that junior year when all my health symptoms started up, because I had gone through, you know, another big grief in my family. I had a lot of stuff going on. So yeah, that's where it latest was. I got the chronic hep C diagnosis, and I had to start a treatment. And what that did, the treatment is it attacks like these two proteins that are needed for the virus to replicate. So once I finish treatment, the idea is that the virus can no longer replicate. It's no longer thriving in your body. It's no longer attacking your immune system. And then also your blood is not contagious. So that allows me, you know, to just live a normal life, so to speak. And, you know, I had to pass three tests that verified I was safe and that the hep C markers were no longer detectable in my blood. But that's where I'm at now. And I mean, that was an amazing answer to my health issues, but it wasn't the final answer. I still struggle. You know, I don't have a period. My hormones are so, you know, so screwed up from disordered eating. My gut is rather a mess, and, you know, I still have fatigue, but, you know, that's just life. That's what health is. There's no one easy road. There's no one magic pill. So sorry, that was kind of drawn out, but
it was like an important story.
A lot of levels to it. So
no, it's an important story to share. And I thank you for sharing it. I think that when you go through disordered eating, it literally takes years to come back to what you used to be. Like, it's insane. And then once you're there, like, oh, this is what it means to feel like myself again, like, and physically and mentally myself again. Like, it takes years, and it's still like an ongoing battle, I think. Whether or not people use the term recovered or recovering, it's something that takes a long time. Like, trust me. Like, I remember when I was going through it, like, my hair was thinning out, like, falling out. I was cold all the time. Like, literally, I could come into like a heated room and still have like cold shivers and be like, I'm cold. I need to put on three jackets. Like, you know what I mean? It's actually insane looking back on it. And now I'm at the point that, like, same here, like, I still have some gut issues and it's still trying to work through that. But I remember going into that like refeeding kind of area or like time in my life, I remember like eating like a handful of something and feeling so bloated. Like, I don't know if you went through the same thing, but
yeah, no. And I mean, it is crazy how long. I actually just did a podcast yesterday with someone. We were talking about this idea of, you know, in the moment, you're not thinking of how many years. Oh, I was recording with Remy for Veggiekins, and we were talking about, you know, eating disorders and how, you know, she and I and so many of us, it's crazy to see the lasting effects of those previous decisions. And, you know, when you're in the thick of it, if anyone's listening and they're currently, you know, battling disordered eating or disordered eating thoughts, habits, tendencies, I just urge you to really think about the future. You know, I'm all about living in the present moment, but when you're in a disordered tendencies, disordered cycle, being in the present moment doesn't always help you realize, like, if I don't get my shit together, I, you know, might have fertility issues later in life. You know, my bone density is going to be horrible. You know, I'm at greater risk for all these, you know, diseases and stuff. It's so crazy. So I just urge you guys, if anyone's going through that right now, think of the future in that sense of, is this present moment, are these, you know, not, are these habits, are these food fears, are these, you know, exercise addictions, going to benefit me in the future? You know, like, are they worth it? And I think that's like an important question that I still sometimes ask myself, you know, like, I'm still in recovery, because those thoughts, habits, everything, like, it's, they still come up from time to time. You know, diet culture is all around us. So that's what I feel for it.
100%. And it's like, I remember like around Christmas time, I would be sitting at a table and there's like people being like, I'm not going to have dessert because like that's unhealthy. Or like, and then that just like in my mind, I'm like, oh, like, and then sometimes it will go back to like my old habits and be like, oh, well, like if they're not having dessert, maybe I shouldn't too. Like, you know what I mean? It's just like people have to realize like their words really do matter. And I hope there is a point that we get to in society. And I'm happy to be a part of, you know, this generation that's standing up towards, you know, these past diet culture terms and these things that we never really even thought about until like 2018, 2020, mm-hmm. you know? It's something that I think is ongoing. It's like something we're always going to have to work on and work towards. But yeah, I think that's a really great point that you made. Like, you don't realize how much damage you're doing. Like, I can only say now that like I'm the healthiest I have been in like the last 5 years, you know, which is crazy because that's taken me like 3 years to like, you know what I mean? Like three mm-hmm. years to get to this point. But yeah, I mean, you mess up so much and you're like, oh, why did I do that? You know? And I think in the moment you know, your brain actually changes when you are in an eating disorder. You don't see the bigger picture. Like I used to think I was like, you know, the epitome of health and wellness when I was in my disordered thoughts. Cause I was like, oh, well, I'm eating so clean. I'm working out all the time. This is good for me, you know? And I think that's why I told myself for the longest time. But yeah, I think, you know, it's been a challenge. And I think you can also agree that, you know, even though it's been a challenge, it's probably been a very rewarding journey because it's been like such a journey of like self-awareness and really coming to, you know, your highest potential and realizing it.
Yeah. Because I look at it and I'm like, I see people that are, you know, 28, 30 and, or, you know, older, or nothing against age discrimination, but I'm going to make a point here where they're right now going through this, you know, they're discovering, oh, I did not have a healthy relationship, you know, to health when I was in college. Like, I can't tell you how many people I interview over the age of, you know, 27, and nearly every single one of them can relate to a time in their teenage years, college, when they pretty much had, you know, a full-blown eating disorder and they didn't realize it. Or like, I don't know, the way I look at it is that I went through that experience with, you know, my eating disorder, with grief, you know, with losing my mom, with like going through hell with that chronic hep C. I did all of that. Like I went through that so that I can start my life like fresh now. You know, I'm only 20 and I have so much ahead of me because I was able to learn from those experiences. You know what I mean? So it's like anyone that's going through this right now, like I just feel it's so easy to beat up on yourself. And even afterwards when you're like, why, when you're in year three after, you know, recovery, so to speak, and you haven't gotten your hormones back adjusted. And it can be so easy to beat yourself up and say, why did I do that? You know, what was I thinking? But it is important to have grace for yourself too. You know, put yourself back in those shoes and remember how, you know, how much you were hurting or how much you just wanted a little bit of control in your life. I mean, everything happens for a reason, you know, whether good or bad. And, you know, I think it is important to have grace and compassion for yourself because when you were going through the hard things, you weren't able to see the, you know, silver lining, so to speak, or the rainbow at the end of the very dark tunnel. You know, it's just all in the present. So that's like the only other thing I'd say about it too, is to remember to have compassion because it's all the journey. We're all on our own journey with it. So mm-hmm.
It's all like being the thing that like, sometimes I would get frustrated with myself and be like, why did I ever do that? But I'm also like so grateful for that experience too. Like, if I didn't do this, who would I be? Or like, if I didn't go through this, who would I be? You know?
It's yeah. Like, or it might've taken you like until you were 26 to have the revelations that you're having now. Mm-hmm. So that's amazing.
Yeah. And I think like, that's amazing that we both realized that like at such a young age, we're like, oh, maybe this isn't normal. Maybe what society's feeding us isn't, you know, the full picture. And that's something that takes a long time to realize. And I think like, you and I are both like, I'm sure you get this all the time, but they're like, oh, you're so mature for your age. And you're like, yeah, you know what I mean? And you're just like,
yep.
I am woke, as the kids would say.
But, yes.
Yeah.
Like, no, honestly, it's like gotten to the point. I'm like, what do I say to that? Thank you. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, sure, I might be mature for my age, but like, I also didn't have a childhood. You know, like, I don't know. It's just
same.
It's
always, yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's just such a funny thing when people say that. I still don't know how to like properly respond, without seeming like conceited. I don't know.
Yeah. 100%. Like, I feel that. It's like, okay, yes, I'm mature, but also it's like, I grew up with having to do a lot more.
Yes. Yes. Right there with you.
Yeah. I feel you 100%. But something I also want to roll into, and I think this kind of like ties into what we were talking to you about before we started recording. I was thinking about this, and, you know, I think when we drop out of university or we make big decisions, we're like, it's such a big decision, but it's also such a rewarding decision because you're like, okay, I don't really care what people say about me and I'm okay with what happens next. And I think I want to ask you, how do you deal with that? Like, I don't want to please anyone anymore. I just want to be myself. And how did you kind of come to this whole like journey in your life that you're just like, okay, I'm just gonna make decisions for myself?
Yeah. So it's actually interesting. You know, if I look back at, you know, way back in time, you know, when I was a kid and just see how far the people pleasing gene goes, you know, I was the kid that, you know, even when I was grieving in my darkest days, if I saw my brother in the room, you know, immediately, you know, calm, composed, I wasn't going to upset him. And, you know, just little things like that where it's, you know, you look back and you're like, why is a 11-year-old, was I trying, you know, to just hide all my emotions and all these things just to please people, just to make them comfortable? And, you know, that happened in school. I wasn't a teacher's pet, but I never wanted anyone to feel bad. I'm the type of person, you know, I get so upset when other people are upset, whether they're upset at me or, you know, just a situation. I'm just a people pleaser at heart. It's who I am. But what I had to realize is that there's a difference between being a people pleaser at heart and just being a compassionate, caring heart, because they're kind of the same thing, mm-hmm. but there is a difference. Because with the people pleasing, I would have stayed in college and my life would actually, my life would actually be a lot worse, because I never would have made the Instagram friend that found my hep C. And if I had been with it for at least like another year or two, it would have started to attack my liver, could have developed, you know, scarring my liver cancer. So, you know, being a people pleaser would have kept me in college and probably would have semi, you know, really demolished my life a bit. But what I did instead was, for the first time in my life, I made a decision that was solely for me. Dropping out of college was the best thing. You know, when we were talking about this before, it is the best thing I have ever done in my life. And more importantly, for myself, because it can be so easy when you're a people pleaser, when you have a big heart, to just throw yourself under the bus time and time again, because that's what we do, you know? And especially if you have guilt of, you know, for me, it was guilt over the years I was in disordered eating. So all these tendencies played into it. And when I was toying with the idea of leaving college, my initial thoughts were that I couldn't, you know, I had graduated, you know, second in my class. So I had this idea of, you know, I'd be letting down my teachers and my peers that were all, you know, so proud of me, and that, you know, I'd be letting down my dad and my family who had worked so hard to, you know, do fundraisers. And, you know, we did tournaments right after my mom passed to raise money to help my brother and I go through school. And so I had a lot of, you know, guilt, people-pleasing tendencies, all wrapped up in my decision to even go to college, to go to the career path I wanted to go, which was to be a veterinarian. And something, though, you know, I was just starting to wake up. I was at college, I was there for a week, and every single day felt like I was just betraying myself by trying to fit in there, because that's not me. You know, I'm not your average 20-year-old. Most of my friends are like 21 and up, and they're entrepreneurs in the health wellness field. Like, I vibe with a certain type of people, and college is not, like, if you know me, it's not for me. And so dropping out of college was that big catalyst moment that really showed me how much of a people pleaser I was, and that I could do something for myself that wouldn't necessarily make others happy. And in the end, it would all be okay, because you know what? You do the thing. It might upset a few people. I definitely upset a few people. I'll just, you know, say that flat out. But at the end of the day, you know, look at what it gave me. So for anyone else that's a struggling people pleaser, I just, you know, urge you to really look within, really do some self-analysis and see, you know, like, where's that stem from? you know, did your parents get divorced when you were a kid? Did you lose someone? You know, did you not feel like you got enough attention as a kid? Like, or, you know, maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's just, I don't know, something smaller, but just try to go back and see, like, how far back does this people-pleasing habit go, you know, and how has it affected my life? Has there ever been a time in your life where, looking back now, you're like, why did I do that? Can you identify that as a people-pleasing moment? Because if so, that can be a big wake-up call. And I think the most important thing you can do to get out of the people-pleasing habit is to have that wake-up call, you know, whether that's, you know, someone else is talking to you about it or you do some self-analysis. But yeah, I mean, I'd say that's it. Like, for me, it was really about looking within and then just doing the dang thing, you know, and I don't know, like, try to do something like for yourself for once, solely for yourself, and just see how it feels, you know, and that might give you an indication into how deep the people-pleasing tendencies go, mm-hmm. if that answered the question.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's like, okay, you kind of start to realize that, like, you know, once you make this big decision in your life, you're capable of making so many other decisions and doing so many other things, and that, you know,
it's a ripple effect.
Yeah, exactly. It's a ripple effect. And it's like, okay, well, if I didn't do this, I wouldn't be here. And if I didn't say this, I wouldn't be here. And it's so empowering, I think, to just be like, oh, like, your life is up to you. 100%. Like, that's something that is the simplest concept to, like, and simplest words to put it, but it's like such a complex concept as well. It's like, oh, okay, my life is up to me. So my success depends on me. My, like, friendships depend on me. Like, once you realize that, like, your life is your own and it's not in, like, a system or, like, what your friends value or, like, you know, and I'm not saying, like, going to school is a bad thing, because it totally isn't. Like, it's for some people and they, like, they thrive in that environment. And mm-hmm. I just knew, I was, I don't belong here, you know, like, I do not belong here. And I was there for 2 years. The thing is, like, it wasn't a work ethic problem. I wasn't doing the work, because I went for 2 years, like, literally did half the degree. So I could have chugged through the last 2 years, but no.
Yeah,
not for me. But I just remember being like, I'm not meant to be here. And I think you and I can relate to this. Like, I remember doing group projects and finishing 98% of the project. Like, I remember writing a paper, writing 15,000 words or something crazy. And my group of four other individuals, wrote like 135 words.
And it's funny because I always like to think of it this way too, where I was that person too, you know, in high school. I had, you know, no matter how much it killed me, no matter how much I hated it, I was such a people pleaser. I always had to, you know, get it done, whatever it is. But like now, if I was in a situation, you know, where I was in a group and people weren't working fairly, like, you best believe I'm pulling it all out. You know, like, I'm not, I feel like you get more self-respect uh-huh. for yourself when you leave the people pleasing behind, because now I would not allow anybody to walk all over me like that, you know, to use my writing skills, you know, like they use them in high school. Like, it just doesn't happen. You develop self-respect, even more uh-huh. self-respect, when you quit being a people pleaser.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Like, I don't care. Like, I don't, like, I mean, it's not that I don't care. And I obviously want to respect other people's feelings and emotions and stuff. The moment that someone tries to, like, cross me now, I'm like, no, I'm mm-hmm. like, I'll be nice and I'll be friendly to you straight up, like, when we meet. But if you're just using me, like, I don't have time for that. I just don't want to have time for that in my life. You know, I have too much respect for myself, and I hope other people would as well. But that's something I really did. I would just, like, literally cut off my arm and give it to someone, you know, at my own sacrifice. And I can't do that anymore, I realized. And that's something I'm still learning. I don't know if you also do this. I still do this. It's like, I'm still somewhat of a people pleaser, even though we're, like, talking about
it. Oh, no, same. Pleasing. Yeah. Like, I'm like, yes, it never goes away.
I'm like, yes, I will do that. I would be happy to. Okay, great. Because you want to, I think, you know, in this industry, you're so used to rejection too. So mm-hmm. this is how I put it. I'm so used to being rejected in my life. Not that it's a bad thing. I think rejection is a great thing. You learn so much about yourself. You learn that it's usually not personal, and that, you know, the more rejection you get, I think the more confidence you get too, because you're like, what odds? If that's added to my rejection bucket, great, fill it up, you know? So I think for myself, like, I know what it feels like to be rejected. I don't want to say no because I've been told no a lot. Do you know what I mean? You want to be treated like the way that you wish to be treated sometimes. So you're like, yes, yeah, I'll do that. Okay, great.
Yeah, no. And you know, I'm just like you. It's not okay. So the way I think about it is just like with eating disorders, where I honestly don't know, you know, if there's a day where I'll be 100% recovered. Who knows? People pleasing, same thing. It is a constant practice of, you know, I overcommit because I'm trying to people please. And so then to remedy that, I either suck it up and I go through it, lesson learned, next time I'm not going to overcommit, or I, you know, figure out what's the best way that I can maybe, you know, apologize and just get out of this one commitment that is overwhelming me. Because, you know, just, I mean, everything in life, it's a constant practice. So, I mean, you know, yeah, as we're talking about people pleasing, just, you know, we're still people pleasers. Everyone, you know, that's a people pleaser will always be that way. It's just about getting better at handling it, you know, and just practicing saying, I don't know, you know, whether that's no more often or standing up for yourself or setting boundaries, mm-hmm. like you I just got to do the work.
Exactly. And I think that it, you know, also being like, you know, I need to put myself ahead in this situation, and I'm being better, at, like somewhat better at that too. Even though I'm saying yes a lot, I feel like I'm also starting to say no, but in a nice way. I'm like,
yes,
I would love to do this. I just don't have the bandwidth, which is the professional way of the internet to say that. So, you know, I think there is value in saying no, because also I want to make a point. I think you could relate to this too. If you always say yes, like you can't show up as yourself in your work, mm-hmm. and you will run yourself to the ground. Like I just did an event on Sunday night, and I had also rode the podium at my spin studio and talked for 3 hours at my event that night. I gave so much of myself to people that day. The next day I felt it physically. I literally was just like a slug. I could not move. I was sore. I was tired. Like I didn't want to do anything.
Yeah, no, I agree. Once more, I don't know. It's one of those things you definitely learn from the lesson. You do it once and you remember, and maybe you do it again and then you learn your lesson again. And it might take a couple times, but eventually, you know, I think it kind of drives home, and it's never perfect. Like you're still, and I mean, even though that day wore you out so much, I'm sure you wouldn't change it for the world. Cause I'm sure like both events filled you up, you know, both mm-hmm. the podium ride and the actual event probably just filled your heart up so much. But it's just about, you know, in the future being mindful of the idea of like, okay, well, if I'm doing that today and tomorrow I have 3 podcast you know, recordings, something's got to give. What's it going to be? So mm-hmm. yeah, like just practice it. Always a work in progress.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's always like everything's always a work in progress. But I kind of want to wrap this up here, and I really thank you for coming on. But before we wrap it up, I want to know, what are your top, I want to say 3 recipes. They can be from you or they can be from anyone else that you know on Instagram that you're like, I'm obsessed with this. I make it all the time. And I'm going to add them to the show now.
Okay. Well, you're going to love this. So I was just in California, and I am the worst foodie ever because I had actually never eaten at the Erewhon hot bar before. And some people are going to listen to this and be like, you're such a privileged bitch. But no, like honestly, I've been to California multiple times and I never went and did this like typical foodie thing. So you suggested, right? The cauliflower buffalo wings from Erewhon.
Yeah.
So I got them. Unfortunately, I got them on my last, like I got them for my last meal there, and I had to shed a tear because they were so good and I knew I wouldn't get them again for a while. So I came home and I got the Rachel Mansfield, Just the Good Stuff cookbook, mm-hmm. and she has a recipe in there for cauliflower like wings. So I made them, and holy hell, I'm obsessed. Like cauliflower doesn't always sit well with my stomach, but I am so in love with these cauliflower wings.
I will go through the pain to eat these. Yeah.
Yes. Like I'm just so in love. I just finished off another batch today for lunch. So that's one recipe, her cauliflower wings. I mean, you could probably find another recipe somewhere, but so freaking good. So that's one. Something else I'm really loving right now, I'm having a love affair with sweet potato brownies. I mean, it's just, so good. Yeah, like the fudginess and the chocolatiness. And I like to actually put them on a smoothie bowl, which is oddly like absolutely amazing. Or just eat them plain with like peanut butter. Or since I'm extra, I make like a super rich and fudgy frosting and put that on. So sweet potato brownies. I do have a recipe for those, but I think you do, like everybody does.
Yeah, and they're all a version of it.
Yeah, they're all good. It's just like, you know, we all just make it our own version with late night baking. Like that's how it goes down. So just find any recipe for those. Emma's are good, mine are good, everybody's are good, I'm sure. Maybe not, but so those two. And then, oh geez, those two came easily. Now I'm trying to think of a third one.
If it's just two, we're good with the two.
Last one would just be granola. I'm currently obsessed with granola, just the crunch factor. But what I did is I made granola, but then when it was done in the oven, I put chocolate chips and stirred it up so they got all melty and made clusters. And then I chopped up dates and put that in there. And like, just put that with some almond milk and some blueberries or on a smoothie bowl or just by the handful. And so I'm one happy girl. So
that sounds so good. But thank you so much, Emily, for coming on. I can't wait to get this all edited and uploaded. And I hope you have a good rest of your day.
Yes.
I'd like to say a huge thank you to tuning into this episode. If you guys could share it on Instagram or with your friends and family in real life, because truly nothing better than that, I would be very appreciative of that. And I'm going to leave all of my information to my amazing guests on the show notes. I'm going to be back in your ears real soon, and I hope you guys have a great week.